Hey guys, welcome back to the Teen Life Podcast, where we equip, encourage, and empower the helpers of teenagers. This is Chris Roby, and this is my co-host, Carly Duke.
Hey guys, we're so glad that you're back with us.
Yeah, welcome. Absolutely. Yeah, and this particular interview was kind of a last minute addition to our series, and we were really excited this happened. You're going to hear two different voices on this podcast. One is Tyson Deaver, who is kind of the main character in the story that we tell, but also Sarah Polk, who helped co-author the book Trauma is a Team Sport, which is how I kind of got introduced to Tyson through his book. Now, Sarah's a personal friend of mine, and she's been working on this project for a long time. And my wife and I got to go to a book release party and get to know Tyson and his parents and kind of hear the story that you're about to hear firsthand. This was quite a story.
It was. I was not actually part of this interview, but getting to go back and listen to it as we prepared for this, man, what an incredible story. And not getting to meet him, but just the man that he is and the attitude that he has in the midst of something incredibly unexpected, incredibly traumatic, incredibly life-changing. So he was in a car accident. And you'll hear a story. I don't want to get too much into it because I want you to hear it from him. But the life change that took place after that, man, it is hard to listen to, but at the same time, the attitude that he has about, even if it's not a car accident, but any huge event that would change your teenager's life. So maybe they are an athlete and an injury takes place and they're out for the season. This is the interview that you need to be listening to.
Absolutely. And he has lots of wisdom through this. And I really encourage you guys to go buy the book, Trauma is a Team Sport by Tyson Deaver and Sarah Polk. It's very well written, and uncomfortable is a really good word. I even said that to Tyson when we were talking, that just the way that they describe the accident and just the aftermath of what it felt like to all of a sudden your legs don't work anymore, and how he came to discover that and just the recovery after that and trying to become a normal person again, not being able to use your legs. It was really an amazing book. So I really encourage you to check that out, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes as well, and you can find that on Amazon or anywhere you want to buy a book. But check out this interview with Tyson Deaver and Sarah Polk. We were really glad to be able to do this.
This is the university for us, for those who seek excellence, the highest standard of excellence. For those who will work relentlessly as if working for the Lord. This is the university for those who aim to glorify God in all they do. This is the university for you. Lubbock Christian University.
So, Tyson Deaver, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Tyson, and I'm here with Sarah Polk as well. Sarah and Tyson wrote a book called Trauma is a Team Sport, and it's about Tyson's story of an accident that happened in 2005 that changed everything. And Tyson now is author and speaks at schools and corporations and motivational speaker, has a great story, and that's what we want to talk about with you today. So before we get into the accident itself, talk about Tyson Deaver before the accident.
I was, at the time, a college student at Texas State. I just got finished playing college baseball for a couple of years. Had a shoulder injury that forced me to quit, you know, but growing up, I'm a West Texas country boy, and, you know, I played football and baseball and hunted and fished and do all the things that a country boy does, you know. And so once my baseball career was over, we had visited Texas State and the Austin area a couple times just as a vacation, and so I fell in love with it down there, and I said, you know, that's where I'm going to school. And I told my roommate at the time, Ben, I was like, I'm going whether you're going or not. And so I did, and it was incredible. And you know, I was bartending at a Mexican food restaurant while I was going to school, and that's what I was doing. And leads up to the day of the accident, which was the day we got out for spring break.
Yeah. So athlete sports is a huge part of your story. But going to college, kind of doing the normal college thing until heading out for spring break. So take it from there.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, it was all about sports, you know, and, the older I get, those life lessons that your coaches say, you're going to learn this and you're going to come back to it later on. Well, I am. And I'm kind of reflecting on back on those days, but, going to school at Texas State, it's the day we get out for spring break, a Friday, 1:30 in the afternoon. And I'm not a big fan of a lot of traffic, so I tried to avoid I-35 as much as I could. And
we
so,
all do, yes.
Right.
We live on it, and we still try to avoid it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm on a two-lane road on the right, in the right-hand lane, sitting still, 0 miles per hour, seatbelt on, blinker on, doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. And behind me is a single cab pickup truck. And like most cars do when they get tired of waiting, I remember them going around on the shoulder of the road and getting back in front of me. And behind them come a fully loaded cement truck traveling close to 70 miles an hour. No signs of him hitting the brakes, slowing down, but he hit my car from behind and went completely over the top of it. And when he did, he knocked me into oncoming traffic where I was hit again by Nissan Xterra. So got hit twice and still 100% conscious. I mean, I remember the sound and really the smell and the fire and being trapped inside this car thinking, I don't know what's going to happen from here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trapped inside of a burning car doing everything I can to get out. I was actually trying to go out the back passenger side of the car. Okay. Clearly didn't know where I was, but I knew that I needed to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And screaming at the top of my lungs, all that with a punctured lung and a torn diaphragm, not knowing if anybody was there. Luckily, Ryan, one of the guys in the single cab truck that went around me, he did come
around. Oh, that was him that went around you.
Right.
Like, I didn't, okay.
Yeah, so he went around, and they saw the truck coming, so they looked back, and then they saw the crash happen. So Ryan immediately come running up to my car, and you know, I'm screaming, trying to get somebody to help me. Didn't know if anybody was there, and luckily Ryan was. And you know, Ryan's probably, 5'7", 140, 150 pounds. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I'm 6 foot and weigh 210 pounds. And there's just no physical way for him to get me out of that car by himself. You know, it's just not possible. So luckily for me, two more heroes, as I would call them, were passing by that day, Daryl O'Neill, Philip Breedlove, and they see the wreck happen and they come running up to my car. And Daryl reached in my car and grabbed me by my belt while Philip took the door panel of my car. It's laying on the ground, obviously. He picks it up. He jumps into my car and uses that door panel to shield the flames, untangles my feet from what's left of the pedals while Ryan and Daryl and even Philip, they all lifted me out of the car. And when they lifted me up and got me out, that's when I lost consciousness for the first time. Wow. So they put me under the tree and started doing what they could. Ironically enough, that day across the street was an elementary school, mm-hmm. Elm Grove Elementary, and they're having fire day that day. So there's a fire truck and an ambulance outside on break, seeing here it happened, and they immediately called Starflight because they knew how bad it was. And right. They come rushing over, which is a God thing. I mean, they're right there to start working on me and start the CPR. And, you know, Starflight gets there a little bit later. They take over and load me up in the helicopter, and phew, I'm gone. And, you know, best I can, looking back on all the medical reports and the time log of when it happened and when I landed at Brackenridge, this is probably one of the things that's most miraculous about this whole ordeal is the wreck happened. From the time my wreck happened, they called Starflight, left Brackenridge, got to the scene, loaded me up and took me back. But from the second my wreck happened until I landed at Brackenridge was 14 minutes. Now, if you're going to drive that spot, it's going to take you 45 minutes to an hour, you know, with no traffic. And so for that to happen in 14 minutes, you know, it's this line of events that had to happen in order for me to survive. And the only way I can explain it to you today is good Lord wasn't done with me.
Right.
And
right. There's
a reason for me to still be here.
14 minutes from the wreck to when you landed. That's incredible.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's hard to wrap your mind around for sure.
Well, and what professionalism by the medical staff and to be able to do that and to transport you safely, you know, in your condition. So from the book, when you arrived, it said you didn't really have any exterior signs of trauma. I mean, you were no real burns or bleeding or anything like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, if you look at pictures of my car and you're thinking, one, how did anybody live through that? And okay, they lived, but they had been burned and messed up. I mean, but you look at pictures and when my parents got there, they saw me and didn't know what to expect either. But I have had a scratch between my eyes. I have a little burn on the top of my left knee, about the size of a quarter, mm-hmm. A little burn on the back of my calf on my left side, about the size of a quarter, some minor little scratches and burns on my arms and a notch taken out of my ear. But as you were probably read in the book, this ear was always bigger than this one. So now they're even. So, hey, it all worked out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's crazy. Everything was internal. And list of injuries, a punctured lung, torn diaphragm, several broken ribs, and then my spinal cord at T12 was completely severed.
Right, and they did not discover that until a little bit later after they had repaired the diaphragm, your diaphragm, and the internal bleeding. Is that correct?
Yeah, they didn't find that until a little bit later. They kind of got me somewhat stable, but I kept hemorrhaging internally, and it was when they finally found that and got that fixed, that's when I really started to turn the corner, and they knew that I was going to be okay after that.
Right, right. So talk us through finding out that you wouldn't be able to use your legs again, because you said you couldn't feel your toe, is that right? Or wiggle your toe.
Couldn't wiggle my toe. Yeah, I remember the TV interview, and I said, I always remember wiggling my big toe. I mean, who doesn't? You know what I mean? But I remember the doctor come in, and he said, Tyson, you're paralyzed. And I said, yeah. And I didn't believe him. But in the back of my mind, I did, and I knew. But I needed to hear it from a more trusted source. And unfortunately, I put that on my mom to tell me that. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I could take back anything over the whole deal, it would be that, just because she didn't need to be the person to tell me that. But she did. And, you know, it was right then and there. It was a decision that I made. I could see the hurt in her voice, and I knew they're only going to be okay, meaning my parents are going to be okay, if I'm okay. And it was that point in there where I said, hey, I'm just going to go play wheelchair basketball. And, you know, and I just tried to make the best of it. And it's what I've tried to do.
Right. So let's talk about recovery, because I feel like that's where a lot of this gets very real, of trying to get, because you talked about trying to get back to normal as quickly as you could. Right.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I use quotations, you know, the air quotes when I say normal, because normal for you is not normal for me, and everybody has their normal, whatever it means. But that was a big thing to me. Who am I now without my legs, and what is normal? Because to me, that's a foundation, and without a foundation, you can't build anything. So it was important for me to find out, who am I, what is this going to be like, and where is my starting point? And, you know, once I found that and had a couple days under my belt to say, all right, this is kind of what it's going to be like. I mean, clearly everything's chaos at that point still, but you're starting to grasp a little bit at a time. And you just start building from there. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was easy. I'm not going to sit here and tell you today is easy. I mean, I'm a motivational speaker, and I try to be as positive as I can and have as many good days as I can, but I'd be lying if I sit here and said they're all positive, because that's not the case. I mean, you all struggle, and there's days where I get up and, I mean, I would love to stand up out of bed and go for a run, or, you know, just go walk in the shower and get dressed real quick, but it doesn't happen like that. It's a reminder every day when I get out of bed, I got to pick up my legs with my arms and move them to get myself out of bed.
So Sarah, if you would, kind of surprise you there. Tell me what drew you to this story.
You know, it was an incredible story, and I'd heard it many years before because my mom and Tyson's mom were friends 13 years ago. But I, of course, had never met Tyson. I didn't even know his name. But I'd heard the story through my mom, because she was so heartbroken for her friend, and had heard about his accident and knew that he had survived, but we didn't know how intensely he was hurt. And so it was something that I'd heard before. And then when I became friends with Martha, his mom, when they moved up here, I kind of shook my head, kind of like, I don't really think that we're going to write a book. Like, I remember when Martha said, hey, will you come over and meet with my son Tyson? And I think you'd be great. I know that you write. I know that you'd be a great author. I think you'd do great with the story. Will you come over and meet with him? And I said, sure. But in the back of my mind, everybody says that. Everybody says, you should write this book, or you should write that book. And they never come to fruition. And so I came over and met with Tyson. And his story is, of course, very compelling. But there were so many parts of the story, especially his emotional responsibility, which was very compelling. And I think that is a message that's so important for all of us at any age, is to show emotional responsibility and help others, make it easier for others when you're suffering, not to take on their emotional baggage, but to not increase someone else's suffering. It was very compelling.
Right. So let's talk about the emotional side of this. 'Cause, you know, as reading through it, it's, you know, I'll be honest, as you read through this, it scares you a little bit.
Sure.
You know, I mean, of thinking that this could be something someone had to go through, you know? And so, which I think is a compelling part of your story and shows how well written the book is and that kind of stuff. But talk about just the wide range of emotions that you've gone through as you've recovered and kind of gotten things back to whatever, like you said, normal mm-hmm. is.
Well, you mentioned that y'all are talking about the unexpected, and I mean, what better story? This is it. If you set me down at 18 years of age and said, Tyson, draw us a map of what your life is going to be like. No, I'm not going to be naive. I'm not going to draw a straight line up the page. I mean, it's going to veer off a little bit. I mean, I understand that, but where my life is today from 18 years of age, when if somebody did sit me down and say that, I mean, I did a complete 90-degree angle. I'm going the other way now, mm-hmm. you know, and it was the unexpected of all unexpected. And, you know, there's times where you get mad. There's times where you're sad. There's times where you're inspired by the fact that that's where I was, but here I am now. And then the next day, it's a cycle and it's a daily battle. I have this thing that I try to live by, and I try not to have a bad day. That may sound crazy. I'm going to have some bad hours. I may have two bad hours or three or four, but I try to do something to reverse that, try to turn it around. I try not to have a full bad day. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But that's me holding myself accountable and trying to get those negative thoughts out of my head. I'm trying to turn this around, trying to make this into a positive. And, you know, when everything is positive, that's when life is good. But, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's always peachy, because that's not the case.
Right. So who was the most helpful for you during this time?
Oh God, I don't know if I could say one person. Clearly my parents were vital. My relationship with Christ was vital. Mm-hmm. My brothers and my buddies, I mean, there's so many people. I remember when I started playing wheelchair basketball, I never wanted to be around other people in chairs because I wasn't, quote unquote, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. I was placed into a chair. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's different. And so I start playing wheelchair basketball, and I quickly learn these guys are a lot better than I am. Mm-hmm. And I started learning little tricks and little, you know, here's a little tidbit for you to take, and it's going to make life easier. And it wasn't until I embraced that I truly started living life again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I learned a lot from those guys. There's no way it'd be impossible for me to put this on one person. But that's kind of the beautiful thing about it is, as we go through life, you build a team around you. Mm-hmm. And when the times get tough or you're going through a difficult time, you can fall back on that team.
Right.
And, you know, I got a lot of motivation and inspiration and a lot of kicks in the seat of the pants saying, hey, go do it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be scared. Just go do it, because it is scary. Mm-hmm.
So with this team of people that are around you, what's something that someone did that was especially helpful, like they actually did for you or told you or pushed you towards it? Like that was a big deal during that time.
I think it was one of the first trips I took back to Midland. My parents were living in Midland at the time. And so I had to jump on a plane to get out there. That was the first time I had flown. So that was a big stretch. Mm-hmm. That's out of the comfort zone for sure. But we get there, and this is my first time to travel in a wheelchair. And my parents are there, and they're supportive, but they pushed me to do everything. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to help me unless I needed it. Mm-hmm. And looking back now, I appreciate that because, you know, I think it was my wreck happened in March, and then in September, October-ish, after Amber and I had broke up, I'm living in an apartment by myself. So I have to learn how to get into a bathtub. I have to learn how to cook and do laundry and do all those things. And to be honest with you, living in an apartment by myself and forcing myself to do those was the best thing that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. It truly was. But it goes back to, you know, the trips, and then even in rehab and in the hospital, my parents, they're there to help if I need it, but they're not just going to enable me.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Well, and there were so many helpers. I had this unique perspective because I was on the outside looking in, getting to interview all the helpers, mm-hmm. and they got to tell me their story in the rearview mirror kind of a deal. And so I wasn't in the thick of it when it was happening. And it was so interesting because every person was thrilled that they got to be a part of the story, but they each had their own story. Mm-hmm. And so the experience that Martha, his mom, had, and the experience that Daryl, the person who, one of the men who pulled him out of the car, their traumas were all, they all had their own trauma right. alongside of Tyson. And when I walked into this story to start the journey alongside them, I thought they all had one. There was one story, there was one trauma, it's Tyson's, but that's mm-hmm. not true. Because mm-hmm. as the mother of a son who's gone through this, or as someone who was not expecting to drive up on this, and then it's still, when we went and saw Daryl last month, I guess, when we were launching the book, we went to say thank you and drop off a book, and he broke down in his office. It's mm-hmm. still very fresh for him 13 years later.
Yeah. Right.
And so every helper was so glad to be a part of it, but they all had their own story.
That's interesting.
Their own experience.
Yeah, their own level of trauma with it, yeah. So on the flip side of that, and I think you cover some of the book as well, but what's something that someone did or said that just wasn't very helpful during that time?
Well, like, let's go back to the plane ride.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting on and on the plane, and I don't know what to do. It's the first time I've ever done it, and I don't even remember exactly what happened. I just remember that they weren't helping me at all. You know, like, well, I think she said something like, you need to get up and just walk to your seat. I'm like, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, my legs don't work anymore. And mm-hmm. Amber was with me and she lost it. But, you know, it was the first experience that, because when you're going to rehab, everything's supportive. We're here for you. We're going to help you out. And then you get in the real world and you're going to jump on a plane. Somebody asks you to just walk to your seat. That's not possible.
Right.
It's, you know, one of those first things. All right, how are we going to overcome this?
Right.
You know, how are we going to react to this?
Right. So you talk about three action steps in your book that kind of helps you get through the most difficult parts of your recovery. And I'll list them off just, and I want you to talk about them, because I thought it was just so cut and dry. Number one, life is hard. Deal with it. Number two, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Number three, don't surrender. Can you walk us through that a little bit? Because you place this in the book in the time where it seems like things were the most difficult. And these are the things that kind of got you through it.
Yeah. And Chris, this goes back to, I saw a lot of people when I was in rehab that they were quitting, they were stopping, they were giving up. And it all comes back to attitude. It truly does. I mean, there was people that had been there for months, and I'm 3 weeks post accident, and they're having me go into their room to talk to them. And, you know, one of the first roommates I had, he had this little A-frame deal on his bed with a pole going down the middle. And I asked him one day, curiosity got the best of me, and I said, so what is this? And his mom answered for him, and she said, well, if he can't wake us up in the middle of the night, he could reach up and grab this pole to lift himself up to roll over in bed. And I'm like, hold up. We have the same injury level. He's been in a chair for months longer than I have, and I can already roll over in bed. So, I mean, there's so many examples. And even going back to when I was teaching and coaching, I mean, students in my classroom going through a difficult time, shutting down, stopping. Mm-hmm. Life is not fair, and it's going to be tough at times. There's no doubt about it. That's no secret. How are you going to respond to it? You know, and mm-hmm. I think it does go back. We talked about building yourself a great team. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that who you are as a person before adversity happens determines how you're going to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And it's back to that foundation. It's back to that team. When the going gets tough, what are you going to fall back on? I mean, what are you going to reach for? And if you have a good support group around you, it just makes that a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you in the book, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, that you're going to have bad hours, you know, because when you read that, you see, you know, life's hard, deal with it, stop feeling sorry for yourself. And on the surface, you'd be like, well, that's kind of hard because, you know, life is, you know, sometimes I have bad days.
Sure.
But you talk about kind of you allow room for the pity party for a little bit and a little bit of time for that. Talk about what does it take for you to get out of that place? If you're going to be in that place and you're going to be okay with being there for a certain period of time, how do you get out? Because you talk about how it can turn into days, into months,
sure.
into a lifetime.
I mean, there's a ton of different things that you can do. I think the most obvious one to me is your faith. You know, what are you going to fall back on? Whether that's prayer, if it's scripture. For me, one of the things that I like to do, aside from praying and just talking to my parents, I'm pretty real with them. If I'm having a tough time, I'll call them and tell them. Mm-hmm. But one thing I like to do, I think it's okay to have those hours or 2 hours or three or whatever. I mean, that's to be expected. And I think that's part of the recovery process is allow yourself to go there, but don't stay there. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I like to do is I'll flip through a drive-thru and I'll look back in my rearview mirror and I'll tell the cashier later, say, hey, I want to pick up their tab. You know, and this is what I do. This is, I'm not saying everybody needs to do this, but I'll pick up their tab. I don't need a thank you. I don't need anything. I just pay for theirs. I pick up mine at the next window and I drive off. Mm-hmm. And for me, they may like it. They may not like it. They may appreciate it. They may not appreciate it. But for me, that's just something I found that helps me. There's the saying, it's hard to live in a negative world when your focus is on helping others. Mm-hmm. And it's what I try to live by, you know, and when I'm down, it's doing something for somebody else that truly gets me out of that rut.
Tyson has such a positive attitude. And I think when we first started this conversation toward this book, I just assumed he was just a major optimist, like sunny side, sunny disposition, total, just bright side kind of guy. And I realized as we started talking, it's not so much that he's just only seeing the positive. I think it's the opposite. I think he has been through so much negative and so much trauma and so much difficult challenges that he takes all those in and decides that, nope, positive's more important. Mm-hmm. And that's been a mindset change for me too, to realize it doesn't just have to be that you only see the positive. It's that you're willing to believe that the positive is more important.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about it, who wants to be around a negative person?
Right.
Nobody does, right. You know, I mean, so why would you want to be that negative person? Cause nobody would want to be around you. And, a lot easier said than done at times, but you know, it goes back to what I said, you know, don't feel sorry for yourself. Just it's okay too for a little while, but don't live there.
Right.
That's not going to accomplish any goals that you have set for yourself. It's going to be you out there chasing them and making it happen.
Well, and it's work worth doing, I think.
Sure.
You know, when you're in a tough place of saying, you know, because I would think that if I was in a negative place, I wouldn't think to get in the car and go buy someone's. But because that is work. That's having to admit that there's more going on in this life than just me, that kind of stuff. But I think that actions like that take you outside of your story and
sure
get you a bigger perspective, even if it's small like that, but it's just enough.
Yeah.
To get you moving in that positive direction.
And then you get in front of the car that's a van full of mom and 14 kids, and you're like, oh,
you have to
reevaluate this real quick.
How much do I really want to feel better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still do, but it's, right. It's just a funny way of looking at it. But.
Well, a couple other things as we kind of wrap up. Towards the end of the book, you share what's called your not-so-secret formula. I like this idea. It's simple, but helps you. I feel like it can really help anyone move forward. And that's number one, set goals. And number two, invest in others by putting them first, which is what you just talked about. And number three, do your part. So walk us through that just real briefly of why, what's so great about that formula.
Well, you got to have a vision, you know, I mean, you don't know where you're going if you don't. So you got to set those goals. And I challenge every time I'm on stage and I'm talking to a group of students or even in a corporation, I mean, I challenge the audience, set high goals. I mean, don't set them to where you know you'll reach them. Set them high. Do whatever you can to get there and don't let anybody or anything stop you. But it's keeping your eye on those goals. And for me, it's a drive to, I don't want to fail. I don't want to get there. And there's times where you reach them, times where you don't. And that's okay. But that's what drives you to keep trying to reach those goals for sure.
So talk about doing your part. What does that mean when you say you need to do your part?
Be you, you know, it's not going to be easy. And I know I've said that a lot, but I think it's worth saying too, because you read stories and maybe you'll hear a podcast or something and people will make it look easy or sound easy. And it's not, it's a battle and it's a grind, but you got to do your part. You're not going to reach your goals unless you do. And that starts every single day when you get up, you have a choice to make. You're going to be positive. You're going to be negative. You make the most of your day, or you're going to lay in bed and just throw in the towel and say, I don't want to do life in a wheelchair today. You know, well, unfortunately that's not an option that I have. You know, I got to put myself in a chair and go do life, whether I'm going to do it 100% or 50%. That's the choice is mine. But that goes back to be you, you know, and do the little things that are going to get you there that truly do make a difference in your life and others' lives and life in general.
So as go ahead.
No, that's fine. There were, as we were going through the part of Tyson's story where he decided to live independently, I mean, he lives on this great lake house. Brock and I went down last month to film some promo videos. He's got this great spot on Lake LBJ, but it's hard. I mean, he's got this ramp down to the dock, and every time he would go down it, it would terrify me because it's, I mean, he's basically doing like 40 miles an hour down this ramp heading towards water. It's terrifying. But he talks about not wanting others to do the heavy lifting for him. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a place of struggle and pain, it's really easy, I think he's talked about, to allow others to do that mm-hmm. because they want to. Mm-hmm. Because when you see someone struggling, you want to do the heavy lifting for him. And Tyson's never, at least in the story that we've experienced together, he's never allowed that. He wants to be his own person. He wants to live the life that he dreamed of, and that's to live independently. He still hunts. He fishes from his dock. He has a bass boat. I mean, he's living the dream that he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think if he had not allowed himself to take the hard steps towards doing the heavy lifting on his own, that wouldn't have happened. And I don't think he'd be as happy as he is today.
Yeah, and I don't want to minimize the fact that it is a conscious decision that each person makes. Mm-hmm. My back's against the wall. I didn't ask for this. It's the card I was dealt. It is what it is. And let's just go make the best of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've tried to do. And, you know, Sarah touched on it as well. But, I mean, I fish, I hunt, I speak. I'm doing everything today that I'd be doing if I was walking. Mm-hmm. Just do it a little bit differently. Hmm. And that was big for me. You know, I mean, to not be able to hunt or fish, that's my therapy, mm-hmm. you know, and I think everybody needs something, whether that's reading books or going for a swim or whatever your escape is. But for me, it's hunting and fishing.
I love that because when we work with teenagers with teen life, that's a big part of what we help teenagers understand is you actually have what it takes. You got everything you need.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not a common message, I think. Especially the teenagers, and I hear that in your story completely. You have what it takes, you know, and you're just doing sure. that differently. So that's incredible to me. So a couple things as we wrap. This has been incredible. First of all, if you were talking to a teenager who had gone through a traumatic event to the scale of what you've gone through or not, I mean, I'm defining trauma as something that's beyond their ability to handle at the time, what would you say to them?
First and foremost, take a couple steps back and just look at the big picture of life. And from there, I would say, you know, going back to the foundation that we talked about earlier, take a couple steps back, look at your life. Where is it that you want to go from there? You've got to have that picture. You got to have that goal. I mean, because if not, then you're just walking around blind. Mm-hmm. And so take a couple steps back, look at your goals, and from there, I mean, it's up to you. You know, mm-hmm. you want to reach them today. You want to reach them a year from now. You want to go 100%. You want to go 50%. You want somebody to help you along the way. I mean, I didn't want anybody to help me. I've had a lot of help along the way, mm-hmm. but not anybody that was right there just hold my hand and saying, let's go do this. You know, mm-hmm. that's got to be a self-starter that you do. But that would be the first thing I would say is, recognize the situation, take a couple steps back and just look at the big picture of life and then start mapping out where you want to go. And from there, make it happen. Mm-hmm. It's up to you.
Right. So on the opposite end of that, for a helper, for someone who was helping a teenager through a difficult time, what would you think is the most helpful thing for them to know?
Show that you care. Each person, whether you go through trauma or not, I mean, anybody who faces adversity in life, it's going to be a speed bump that you have to overcome. It's going to be you that gets over it. Somebody's going to help you, but I mean, it's going to be that person and the decision that they make to go. And it truly is a conscious decision that they make. And a person may make that decision like I did 3 weeks after my accident in the hospital, or it may be 3 years down the road when they finally say, all right, this really isn't going to change and this is the way it's going to be, but I'm ready to go forward. And it could be 10 years down the road. Everybody is different, but it's going to be a conscious decision they make, and nobody can make it but them. But once they do, give them all the support they need to get to where they want to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been incredible. Could y'all tell us more about the book, where you can get it, and You want to do that part and then talk about your motivational speaking?
Yeah, Trauma is a Team Sport. It's on Amazon.com. It's in Kindle ebook and it's in paperback. So if you're an e-reader junkie, we have an option for you.
There you go.
You can find more information about both of us at www.TysonDever.com. And then I'm Sarah Paulk. So www.Sarah, and then Paulk, PAULK.com.
Excellent. And then tell us a little bit about your work speaking.
So I was a teacher and a coach for 2 years. And then in 2009, I started speaking full time. And this is what I do today. I mean, I travel the nation talking to middle school students all the way up to Fortune 500 companies. And it's a wide range of audiences. It's a lot of different states. But no matter who the audience is, I have a presentation designed for them. I would love the opportunity to come make a positive difference in somebody's team and in their group and impact them in a positive way.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story today and obviously for all the work you guys put into the book and all the lives are going to be changed because of that. Thank you guys so much for this time.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
Hey guys, it's Carly back again. And just before we wrap up, I just want to jump in. Didn't you love that interview? And Tyson and Sarah and the way that they talk about it and the wisdom that he has in the midst of something so terrible. But I especially love the part where he talks about allowing room for pity parties. So allowing your teenager or yourself grace when something happens to be sad, to be mad, to be frustrated, to feel negative or down, but not letting yourself stay there. And he talks about that. He doesn't stay down for long. He gets back up. He pulls himself out of even those mental moments that are so difficult. And so we just want to encourage you again. If something big happens with your teenager, don't expect them to bounce back immediately. Give them grace, but also don't let them stay there. And so we hope you got even more takeaways from this interview. And as Chris said, you can find all of this information, his book, our links in the show notes. And so you can go to our website, teenlifepodcast.com, for more information for his bio and how to find him and how to contact him. And as always, we also want to thank Under the Chandeliers for our podcast music. And come back next week because we have another great interview for you.